you didn't know, then your ass better call somebody. It's Big Dog Ball Talk, Matt Eichhorn, Jordan Flegel, coming at you on a wet, wild weekend. Talking NBA Cup. Yep. Who gives a fuck? I guess us. They got us. They fucking got us, Jordan. We're also going to be discussing a little bit of some hot topic news around Jimmy Butler and potential trades, as well as some beef between his agent and our beloved NBA insider, Shams. I don't know if we can say beloved, but I miss Woj.
Me too.
Little geeky guy. Like, Shams, you're a little too put together. I don't like it. I don't like it. You flirt with, like, Kay Adams. Fuck you. I'm out on Shams, actually. I think I might have to take Jimmy's agent side. But we'll get into all that, as well as the return of NBA blind comparisons.
Yeah.
So I hope you guys are excited for that one. But to start off, Jordan, I do want to talk about this. I know just before this off air, I mean, we talked about it on this as well. I've expressed my hate for technology. I know as somebody who uses technology, like, all the time, every day, yes. you would think I wouldn't like it. But the older I get, the more it advances, the more I think I understand, like, when we were kids and we were like, all our, like, old people were like, fuck all this shit, I want to use a typewriter. Like, I'm actually kind of on board with that. I think technology, we're getting too far. I don't think that we need it. We should take a step backwards, I believe. And last night I watched a movie, Subservient, which, I don't know if you've heard of this.
Not heard of this, no.
So it's on Netflix. It's a pretty good watch. Kind of like a futuristic dystopian. What was that? The Black Mirror is the kind of thing I compare it to. What was the original show called? You know what I'm talking about. It was like a black and white show.
Oh, Twilight Zone or whatever?
Twilight Zone. That was what I was looking for. Yeah, it's kind of like that. So yeah, the premise is that they have these things called Sims that are these lifelike human robot, like android things, but they're essentially like robot slaves. You put them in the house and they cook, they clean, they fix shit for you, they do everything. But then as the movie goes around, like, all of, they're just replacing all the workers with these Sims. So like people like at the hospital, all the surgeons are Sims, all of the people who do construction are Sims, like all of these the robots are pushing everybody out. But the movie's centered around this guy whose wife is like, needs a heart transplant. She's dying in the hospital. He's having trouble taking care of his daughter and his like newborn son. And so he goes to the fucking the robot convention, and lo and behold, his daughter really wants the Megan Fox robot. And the guy's I guess. So then Megan Fox, as this robot, lives in this guy's house and is like serving him and doing like, it just does everything.
Wait,
for the
actual,
like,
Megan Fox.
It's actually Megan Fox. That's her. Yeah, she's the main. She's like the main actor in it, along with this other guy. And not to spoil it, because if you do want to watch it, but she gets a little attached. There's some nudity throughout the film. So you can kind of put one and two together on how this goes. But interesting movie.
But she's a robot.
She's a robot. But the robot's got a puss, so if that answers that question. But all in all, I was talking to my partner, but we were watching it. I wouldn't fucking ever have that. I would never let a goddamn lifelike robot like that in my house. No. Like, yeah, it sounds great to have a fucking, essentially a slave that you don't have to feel bad about. Like, you literally can just be like, yeah, clean up this, cook me dinner. Like, it does everything you want. It's designed to do everything you want.
It's like an oven or a vacuum cleaner, but
exactly,
walk
it
around.
Just does it all.
Sure,
but yeah, it interacts with you, and I would think it would kill me.
See, that's what I don't want. I don't want it to interact with me. I want it to be a machine. I don't understand what the the desire is there. I'm already a little bit weary of my little Google Home Mini, which is sitting right next to me. It's listening to everything I'm saying. As everyone knows, I'm 100% of the old school. Let me churn my own butter. You know what I mean? I'll do it. I'd rather, because you know what's going
to
happen.
You look like a guy who likes to churn his own butter.
You know what's going to happen. We are going to forget how to do any useful thing. And then that's going to be a whole
100%.
Other issue down the line.
I'm already fucking stupid.
Yeah. I mean, compared to like people in our parents' generation, we don't know how to do fucking anything. We're actually pathetic. and we should talk about that more.
Hey, I blame our parents' generations for not teaching us. How about that?
Correct. Yes, they wanted to teach us, but they were so fucking annoying about how they did it. So fuck you. I'm gonna play video games.
J- Yeah, play video games, eat a fish heart, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, I did learn how to do that.
We hope you guys enjoyed learning our takes on the robotic world, tech. AI, tech. Yeah, tech, but big dog tech talk. not a TED talk. Maybe we could do a TED talk, but I don't know, Jordan.
Yeah.
Over to the NBA. The NBA Cup, the semifinals, going down as we're recording this Saturday afternoon. So we hope that you guys get to this beforehand. We've given our picks here. A little bit of a recap, too. We got the Atlanta Hawks and the Milwaukee Bucks in the Eastern Conference, and the Houston Rockets and Oklahoma City Thunder in the West. Start with the East, Jordan. I mean, bit of an upset there with the Atlanta Hawks getting in. They Trae Young, we talked about it, had the potential to be the ultimate villain like he's been in MSG, and he did it. I love the dice roll on the center logo.
That's very disrespectful.
One of these days, he's got to come out there and play in some Tims. Like, he's got to keep stepping this up. He's got to come pregame. He's got to get one of those rolls, the Aki way, and munch it down. He's got to do something like that. But Trae Young seemingly owns the Knicks. This was again the Hawks continuing to kind of look like potential playoff threats here out in the East, because the Knicks, they're a solid team. They're looked at as a title contender. They were fully healthy, and they still weren't able to get the job done at home.
Yeah, and it was Atlanta, not I think the Knicks kind of had a bad offensive game like on their own, but I think Atlanta contained them decently, which is a team in the Knicks that's at the very top of the league in terms of offensive efficiency, holding them to 100 points at home. I'd say that's pretty good. Held them to 26% from three, 43% overall. The Hawks did not have that good of an offensive game themselves either, but like you said, Trae Young there at the end really showed his value, and it was a perfect representation of the season he's having. At the end, the dagger was an oop to DeAndre Hunter, I think it was.
He was balling.
Backdoor. Yeah, great game from him. Coming off the bench with 24, like that really lifted them. That play by Trae Young, who's still the head of the snake over there, came from a nifty assist. 11 assists on the night, leading the league still, I believe, in assists per game. Just shows how he's kind of evolved his game a little bit this year to be better suited to winning. The Hawks kind of acting like last year's Pacers in the in-season tournament, kind of just this high-flying young team with a lot of weapons, beating these heavier hitters. And shout out Jalen Johnson, too, a 21 and 15 and 7, and a team high plus 16 in this one, two blocks, two steals. He was typically great all around.
He's an all-star. He's going to be an all-star.
Well, yeah, if not this year, if it down the line for sure.
I think with all the injuries in the East, he's a lock.
Yeah, especially if Atlanta keeps climbing up. Like, they're in seventh right now. If they can get like six and up solidly around all-star season time when the voting starts happening, then yeah, I would 100% say he might even be more likely to be there than Trae Young, because the one place where there's some depth in terms of the players you'd be voting for in the East might be at the guard spot with, Donovan Mitchell. You've got Garland, you've got the Boston guys. It's at the wing where we've talked about here that it's more slim pickings there. So shout out the Hawks. I mean, we've talked about them now, few podcasts in a row. They've really been on the rise, and they deserve to get this win. And, like Jalen Brunson said after the game, if they don't want him out there kneeling on the Knicks logo, then don't let them come in and win it. And I think that's one that the Knicks legitimately, and I think a lot of people thought that they would come out and win on their home court like that. I think they wanted to be able to take pride in a win like that. And Trae Young, the Hawks, just came in, snatched it.
Well, moving on to the other side of the Eastern Conference semifinals here, the Milwaukee Bucks, they get a narrow home victory over the Orlando Magic, 114 to 109. And in this one, we kind of expect it to be a bit of a defensive, slugfest, but it's crazy for the Bucks. I'm getting pretty good at math here, Jordan. If my calculations here are correct, 87 points for the Milwaukee Bucks were scored by Giannis, Damian Lillard, and Bobby Portis of 114. That's insane. to have that money, like all of your offensive contribution comes through three guys, and I think that's the perfect recipe for disaster when you play a team like the Orlando Magic. Even when they're banged up, they're such a deep team, so many good defenders, so athletic, long, fast, jump out of the building. They were able to make this an ugly game, and that's exactly the type of situation where the Magic like to be in. They like to win. They like to make things ugly. They like to get down and dirty, and you know, make them earn it defensively. And I watching this one, I was kind of like, the Magic might actually pull off this upset. If they had Paolo or Franz or both of them, they probably mollywop the Bucks in this one. It's pretty crazy to think that the Magic are still a competitive team amidst all these injuries. And we do got to shout out Jalen Suggs, 32 points, 9 boards, 5 for 6. It was 5 for 6 from the free throw line, 3 for 11 from 3, which is not great, but he. For a guy who we've said not the greatest offensive scorer that we've seen in recent years, he's really stepped it up this year, and especially with this opportunity, I think he's capitalizing very well on it, and I think really carving out a spot for himself on this roster.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, when Paolo went down, we gave Franz a lot of praise, rightfully so. He was incredible, but Jalen Suggs stepped up to be that second guy throughout that time offensively, and he's really taking not steps forward. It's like he's taking like leaps forward. Like he's going up two stairs at once, really quickly, getting more comfortable on the offensive side of things. And like that to me, isn't actually that much of a surprise. Like I know he came in kind of raw, but like when you watched him at Gonzaga, he was in control of things. Like he hit that big, buzzer beater from half court that everyone loved. Yep. Like he was, he was an offensive player. He's never been like bad on that side.
They won the Natty the year he was there, right?
I think so. If not, they got to like the Final Four. I always think
that buzzer beater got them to the, like that game was like the that was the Final
was
Four to
UCLA
get them to the
something?
Finals. Yeah, I want to say Johnny Juzang.
Yeah, yeah. I see. All my years mixed up, but
he's in the NBA, I think.
Yeah. Where is he again? Was he on like Phoenix? Just like, I forget. I'm glad finally that sort of what we saw in terms of offensive potential in college is finally now kind of catching up. Still, like you said, 3 for 11, the overall shooting splits are not great at all. And like I talked about a few weeks ago, I think now no one on the Magic can hit a fucking three this year. Yeah. I think they are literally last in 3-point, percentage, even though they brought in a guy like KCP. It's crazy. I'll say once again that they've been so successful this year as such a bad shooting team, but Jalen Suggs will take them. And you go back to last year, he made big strides there, and if he can sort of steady out at like between like 36% and 40%, I think that's you'll be happy with that if he can get there. So yeah, shout out Jalen Suggs. He really kept them in this one. Thought Wendell Carter had a really sneaky good game in this one as well. Mm-hmm. He's not going to, I think he held his own as...
Goga Badadze?
Badadze, yes, of course. He's kind of had a bit of a weird play there at the end where Dame kind of got by him for a layup, defensively, maybe a bit of a brain fart, but overall, he had a strong double-double. And I feel like we've talked about the Magic a lot. We haven't mentioned Mo Wagner at all, but he's also a beast this year coming off the bench, so shout him out. You mentioned the production basically coming from three guys. I mean, Bobby Portis... just had a really efficient game shooting the ball. I don't think that's something he'll do. Like, I think he could take the exact same, have the exact same shot diet and easily in the majority of games have more like, 14 points or something in this one. So where basically every offensive sort of thing that's happening is coming between Dame and Giannis. And yeah, you do not, you don't want that if you're a contender. Like, there, You get guys like Gary Trent, who I think is starting to come on a little bit this season, only shoots 4 times. They're all threes, which is good. We want him out there spacing the floor, but there's got to be some way to make this offense a little bit more, free flowing and getting other guys involved. Like, I know the Bucks won this game, but it's kind of another Giannis doing all the heavy lifting, 37 fucking points in this one. Dame having a decent game, sort of helping him out there. But yeah, long-term, the Bucks still have to figure out how to get more guys involved. They've actually got some decent shooters, I think, and other players who I think can contribute more than what they're doing. But, if you're not even going to give them a shot, literally, there's only so much you can expect from them. And, you know, you've still got the Middleton question as well. But I think in Milwaukee, now that they moved on now and they're going up against Atlanta, who I think they've got to feel confident that Giannis can overpower physically this Hawks defense, which isn't that impressive. Like, I feel like Milwaukee can actually kind of hang their hat if they make it all the way to the finals, potentially win this whole thing. Like, I think for a lot of teams, it wouldn't really matter, but I think it would be a good thing sort of just morale wise if the Bucks could go into it. And I think they got a decent chance against the Hawks here, as hot as they've been.
Yeah, the Bucks 4.5-point favorites going into this one, home team as well, for this pivotal semifinal matchup.
Right? Because they're in Vegas now, right?
Oh yes, pardon me. Yeah, they are in Vegas now. I thought for some reason in my brain I was thinking they're in. They only go to Vegas for the finals, but no, you are right. They are in Vegas now. Home court, quote unquote. But not really. But yeah, the Bucks. Like you said, I do think that really this will come down to, can anyone on Atlanta stop Giannis from just scoring at will?
I don't even know who they're going to put on him necessarily. Yeah. They're going to have to filter guys through.
Like you could try your hand at moving Clint Capella onto him, but then you have I think Okongwu might be a little too slow. But even Clint Capella is too slow too. Like DeAndre Hunter would probably be the best speed and athleticism wise, but even then he still gives up like 4 inches in height and length. Yep. It would still be a tough cover for him. I mean, the nice side of that is that, maybe they just rotate through a bunch of different defenders, seeing what they can do and throw at them. But it's going to be a tough
one. Tyson Daniels, his toughest assignment of the year.
I don't know. He might put a hole in Dyson's chest. That would be a tough one. But again, when we're looking at it, it's kind of hard to pick against the Hawks on the other side of it, though, because, I don't think that the Bucks have shown all that much on defense this year. I think they've actually been one of the worst defensive teams. So I think the Hawks are going to have absolutely no problem dicing them up throughout the game. Trae Young, I think will have a field day being guarded by fucking Damian Lillard, or whether it's Gary Trent Jr., Andre Jatley, all these guys that they've got and they throw out there that really are zeros essentially on defense, which is crazy because Gary Trent Jr. was such a good defender for a while, but whatever. The Hawks do, I think, have a legitimate chance to kind of upset, if you want to call it that. Because again, if I was gonna say who I thought the favorite in this would be, I think I would actually say the Hawks. Like, yes, they've got the Bucks have Giannis, but I do feel like the Hawks are the hotter team right now. I feel like they're a little bit more versatile offensively. Giannis is a beast, but unless they want to put him out there for 48 minutes, I think that the Hawks are going to find a way to kind of come ahead on this one and take the win.
Yeah. I think I'd go with the Hawks. I think it's close, almost approaching like coin flip territory. It does really depend on, how aggressive Giannis is able to be. And like you said, how many minutes he plays, and how much this kind of means to the Bucks ultimately. But I think, the Hawks top to bottom have way more weapons, and you just have to have good shooting nights from a few of your guys, whereas you're really, really counting on your if Dame has one of his off nights, I think it's going to be really hard for Milwaukee to win this one. Even if Giannis goes off like crazy, like we're accustomed to seeing him do. So yeah, I like the Hawks' chances as well. I think I'll pick them sort of narrowly. And I think I like them in a close game too, if it's coming down to the wire, because they've just got, it feels like they've got fresher legs, more guys who can make things happen and sort of muck things up. And I think, specifically for Dame, Dyson Daniels, you throw him on Dame for most of this game, it's going to be really, really hard with that length for him to be effective, I think. So yeah, I like the Hawks in this one.
Well, moving on here to the Western Conference, both Flegel and I going with the Atlanta Hawks to make the NBA Cup final. We got the Rockets and the Thunder. We'll start with the Rockets' path here, Jordan, getting there, pulling off a nail-biting win over the Warriors. Jalen Green hits a couple free throws to put them up and win the game with, I believe, only 2.5 seconds left. Steve Kerr wasn't really happy with the call. He felt like he was, quote, descended into hell with how red everything was on the court. Overall, again, this is a big win for the Rockets. I believe we both penciled in the Warriors to get this one.
We did.
But again, this is kind of, maybe this is a conversation we'll end up having on Monday. I I know that a lot of a hot topic right now is talking about the viewership going down across the NBA. And I think it's kind of, again, like, we're pushing all these guys. Like, Steph Curry, 8-for-17. 19 points is not going to get it done in a pivotal game like this. I mean, I Draymond, 4-for-9. Kuminga had 20, but he shot 8-for-20. Like, nobody really was efficient. Podzimski has been horrible this season. Horrible. And really, it just came down to the Rockets, I think, wanting it more. They had a little bit better depth. They were able to pull this one out. And really, it was off the back of Alperen Sengun, who, again, had a monster game, 26-11-5 on 10-for-18 shooting. So, oh, yeah, he's a – he might be an all-star starter at this point.
But with these new teams,
they don't have a center spot anymore, do they?
No, I guess
forwards,
not.
Isn't it?
True, yeah, you're right.
Have them both out there. That'd be electric. Two big, really slow European guys just doing cool passes in the post. That'd be awesome. They should run that old play we used to run. I believe it was, what was it, the one? Guy comes out to the wing, flash, post-to-post screen, down low on the block. That'd be nice.
Never worked, ever.
It was great. It always worked.
It was fun to try, but yeah.
All those plays worked. We definitely didn't score all of our points shooting threes and going fast breaks. That was we had a good half court offense.
I would love to do like a YouTube breakdown of all of our plays, just for our listeners to know, all of our high school plays. Yeah. Just have it written out on a, you know, get a little graphics team to put something together. Mm-hmm. It was a genius offensive system. More people need to know about.
Sideline B, which just ends up being inbound the fucking ball and do nothing with it. But yes, the Warriors and the Rockets was a solid game, very competitive, kind of an ugly game. But yeah, I do just think right now we're in that situation. It's a bit of a changing of the guard in the NBA. I don't know if Steph Curry is really the Steph Curry that we've all grown to be accustomed to at this point, having a bit of a rough season. And, you know, the young guys, the up-and-coming stars over there in Houston, they're the ones who came out ready to play.
Yeah, and holding this, supposedly really good Warriors offense, at least when Steph's out there, to 90 points is a testament to the Rockets, still second in the league. In defensive efficiency here. This is going to be a very, very hard-nosed game between them and OKC. That's 1-2 in the league in that defensive rating. So that might be another low-scoring one, but you're going to see some real competitive defense being played, which is always good. But yeah, I was all year I've been impressed, but very impressed in this one with how on it and connected this team is as a defensive unit. Like we talked about picking the Warriors, mainly my reason for doing that is that, like, you know, the Steph loves going into Houston and winning. So does Draymond. You know, that's a bit of a rivalry there. Like you mentioned, the teams are quite different, but still, Steph also really just loves these moments. And I easily saw him going off in a game like this. But you're right, 19 for him, not really efficient from the field or from three. Nothing terrible. He's still a great player, but I think Houston's just got, like, they've just got so many young guys that they can, move out there and move around on a guy like Steph, who's usually so hard to contain. Like, you've got the bigger guys like Dylan Brooks, you got Fred VanVleet. Historically, people think of him as like a bad defender. He is a very, you go back to the finals, but, you know, just in general, too, super underrated defender. Jalen Green, much improved on that end and is super, you know, athletic, if nothing else. But you bring Eason and Thompson off the bench. These guys are fucking crazy athletic big stoppers that can handle with anyone from point guards all the way up to fours. Like they're just really, really impressive defensively. And thank God they got this game from Sengun, because no one else was really doing much. Like Fred VanVleet continuing to have a pretty rough year shooting the ball. Still hit a big one at the end, and I think that's kind of the story of Fred VanVleet. It's like you look at his raw stats and his shooting numbers, it's like, oh, he's not great, but he's still really important to have out there, and he is going to hit big shots, even if you go back to that great game we recapped a couple weeks ago when they did play OKC at home, when they won that one. Fred VanVleet had that huge fucking, high-arcing three. Like, he is important to have out there for that shot-making, because Houston doesn't really have a traditional, like, wing or guard superstar that they can go to at the end. But yeah, Sengun was just huge in this one, taking advantage of the fact that the Warriors don't really have any size inside. And yeah, you got just enough from all these other guys, but they're going to have to be way better offensively themselves if they have any chance of beating OKC, because you know, that's that's going up against a defense even better than you, going to be hounding you. I could see Fred VanVleet having another kind of dreadful game. Same thing with Jalen Green, and might have to be Şengün again, taking advantage of what might be the weakest link in that OKC defense, which is their big rotation right now. Still, it's going to be hard for them to do it. But yeah, you got to shout out and give credit to that hard-nosed Rockets defense in this one, shutting down the Warriors.
Well, yeah, talking about the other matchup here in the Western Conference, you said it, the only game that wasn't close, the OKC Thunder beating the brakes off the Dallas Mavericks, 118 to 104. Amazing performance from SGA, 39-8-5. And for everybody who wants to, you know, get on his jock and talk about him being a free throw line merchant, only four free throws in this game. Yep. So, you know, he was getting it done ethically. You know, solid game, obviously, again, from Jalen Williams. You know, he not shooting the ball super hot in this one, but still a solid 18-7-4. Hartenstein really being that amazing filler here, while Chet Holmgren is still out, 10-13 for him. And then you got all the other role players really stepping up. You know, Lou Dort, 11-6. He's chipping in three threes. Kaysen Wallace, 11-8-4. He's been awesome this year. Three threes for him as well.
Kaysen Wallace is so good. Jesus Christ.
And then we got, you know, you still have Alex Caruso, Kenrich Williams, Isaiah Joe. Like, this is a fucking deep team. And they showed it in this one because no one on the Mavericks could really get going, especially when you look at that two-headed monster of Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic. Both of them held to under 20 points in this one, 16 for Luka, 17 for Kyrie. Not great shooting once again for Luka, as we kind of thought he was over the hump. But when you run into I believe they are the highest rated defense right now in the NBA, the Oklahoma City Thunder. They're on another level. I think right now you could probably say they are the best team in the league. And I don't think anybody would argue with you, because performances like this, where you are just battering a team that's looked at as one of your toughest competitions in your conference, I think this is a really great win for the Thunder. They're only going to get better down the stretch of the season when Holmgren gets back. It's scary hours officially here in OKC. This team is looking like a juggernaut right now, and I do think this one was a little bit personal for them after last year's playoff loss. So you know, they get out there, they did what they had to do to get their way past Dallas.
Yes, absolutely. I could have seen it happening this way. I know we talked about it. I forget if I said I was picking Dallas, but that it was a tough choice either way, because I thought both had sort of a mental reason, or like ways that they could psych themselves up for this one.
I don't know if we picked a single matchup right. Maybe I think I think I honestly might have went Orlando too.
Yeah, I think you did. I think I went I went with, who played Orlando again? Oh, the Bucks,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. I think I went with the Bucks. But yeah, I think I went with Dallas in the end. Although
I was kind of
wavering on it, because like you said, I knew at home OKC was going to want to really make a statement here and not lose to these guys again. And Dallas didn't have the OKC killer stopper PJ Washington, who for whatever reason turns into I don't know, prime Carmelo, and yes, plays defense when he goes up against OKC. So, you know, that was certainly a factor there. And yeah, like you said, Luka and Kyrie just, you know, in not the Dorcher chamber, but just the OKC chamber in general, yes, like all of these fucking guys that they throw out there defensively on the perimeter make it so fucking tough. And they just, you know, they, a lot of people pointing it out, they couldn't even get like passes off. They couldn't get entry passes. They couldn't, like, just so many deflections, and these long, big ass fucking guys that, the Thunder have just made it so tough on them.
People were fucking crying. Oh, Lou Dort's got his hands on Luka. He's got his hands on Luka. Good. This is how basketball should be played. Be a little physical. Yes. As long as the refs let them do it, I like it. I agree that they don't let a lot of guys get away with that, but every single game should be played like that.
Yes. We should get back to how they started officiating it second half of last season, where they're like, yes, we're not going to call any of this.
Bring back hand checking.
And trust me, Luka can also handle it. Like, he played in Europe, for God's sakes, where they let a lot of more of that shit go. So, you know, it's not like, it's, you know, going to throw him off too much, any of these superstars. But for those that it does, like the James Hardens of the fucking world, I love to see them, their production plummet when guys are actually allowed to play defense. But, you know, that's another convo. But, yeah, I mean, I think I said too, this game was going to go, and any game between these two teams, of whichever the lead guard on either side has a better game, that's who's going to probably take it between SGA and Luka. You know, I said last week, I still think, you know, in a playoff context, I would take Luka over SGA, even though SGA is, you know, my Canadian brethren. I hate to say that. There's almost no one I'd rather take over SGA. But, you know, if this keeps happening, I'm going to have to reconsider that because, yeah, Jesus Christ, 39, 8-5, like you said, 5-for-9 from three. That's not that typical for a guy like SGA.
He's been shooting three very well lately.
He has. And you know, watch out if that becomes more of a consistent thing, like because he's already unstoppable and one of the most crafty finishers in the league. But yeah, he's got that step back working now.
Is he the front runner for the MVP right now?
I think he is. I think after this game, I would say that he is with how good OKC has been. I think there's going to be the Tim Bontemps straw poll always comes out around this time every year. I think there's going to be one. I'm interested to see what you know, NBA GMs and things think about this. But I would say he is right now. If not that, he's in second place solidly. A masterful game from him because, again, like, you know, OKC really dominant defensively. I think they're only like eighth offensively in the league right now. So like they still rely on SGA a lot, you know, obviously missing Chet, you know, which is probably their second most important offensive weapon, I'd say, when they're fully healthy, just because of how versatile he is as a big, you know, that doesn't help with him being out. But yeah, like Jalen Williams, great game, but like you said, not that efficient. And you just get sort of spatterings of, you know, help from the rest of these guys hitting enough shots here to put them over the top. But SGA, there was this talk this year, like, oh, SGA can't win MVP because they have too much help now. He's not even going to, you know, have enough shots. I'm like, no, trust me, it's still going to run through him. It's still all going to be about him sort of operating under that high pick and roll. He murdered it in this one. And last thing I want to say just about OKC and, you know, how they won this one and how they've won so far, how they will going forward. We always talk about Boston, the amount of threes that they take and just the math problem that they present. Like you have to do something spectacular to beat them. They have to miss a lot of shots. Like just, you know, all things equal, they're just going to beat you by the way that they play. Same thing with OKC and the possession battle. OKC took 101 shots to Dallas's 80. That's 21 more shots because they go hard on the offensive rebound. They steal the ball, you know, as much as anyone in the league because they're so active on the perimeter. And they also take care of the ball themselves. Like they don't turn it over very much. So they just get more possessions than you. And it also translated to 53 point shots to Dallas's 36. That discrepancy is not quite as big, but like you're able to beat Dallas. Obviously, Luka and Kyrie had a bad game, like we mentioned, but overall, they shot 48% from the field and 42% from three. That's not that bad, but if you get so many more fucking shots, you're going to win these games. So I, you know, don't want to get them ahead of myself, but I'd love to see down the road, you know, whether that's in the regular season, but potentially a finals matchup, what's looking like a pretty likely finals matchup, Boston, OKC, these two sort of juggernaut teams that have kind of cracked the code on how to win. You know, how they would match up against each other. Cause, OKC is looking like, the West's version of Boston right now, for sure.
Well, and, looking ahead now to, tonight's game, on the Western Conference, bracket, Rockets, Thunder are 5.5 point favorites. And, I'll say this, Jordan, I think I would fucking hammer it. They just look unbeatable. The Rockets are solid. They are a great team. You know, they're very competitive. We've shown them a lot of love this season. I just don't think it's going to happen for them. They're going to have to play the best defense that they played all season. And they're also going to have to be better offensively than they've been all season. Yeah. And that's been kind of a weak point for them consistently throughout the year. So I'm going to say OKC holds them to it's going to be like 120 to 95. I think that the OKC is going to kill them.
Yeah. I could see that 100%. Yep. Because again, like you just said, Houston already struggles offensively. You're not going to have a breakout offensive game against OKC. It's just not going to happen.
No. Yeah. Well, we'll see what ends up happening there in the NBA Cup. Let us know at Big Dog Ball Talk who you guys have winning between the Hawks and the Bucks and the Rockets versus the Thunder. Moving on. We've got some trade talks here, Jordan. For anyone who's been listening for a while, you know this
Wait,
is
Matt,
our favorite
hold on,
talk.
Hold on. Just because. Just some due diligence here, because I'm pretty sure the finals then are tomorrow, right? Like, it all wraps up this weekend. Like, whoever wins these two games tonight, they play on Sunday?
There's a bunch of games tomorrow. I think it might be... it's either Monday or Tuesday,
Monday's
I want to
say. Monday's got games, too. Is it? Okay. Okay,
I don't know.
Never mind, then. Because this is classic. Alex has not... Yeah, he's not prepped for us. But in the case... Let's just cover bases here. In the case that we're right, and they do play tomorrow, as in we're not going to be podcasting till after it's done, who you got winning the whole thing if the Hawks and the Thunder get through, as we're both kind of expecting here? Who you got?
I'm just going to stick with the Thunder, man. And it is Tuesday, yeah. December 17th.
Okay, never mind.
We will be able to cover it.
Never mind.
Yeah, hey, who knows? Maybe things will change. Maybe something will happen, and I'll end up starting to root for the Hawks. But
true,
or the Bucks. Who knows? Or the Rockets. But yeah, we'll talk about the NBA Cup on Monday's podcast. Now that we actually know that's what it is. Thanks, Alex, for nothing.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Alex.
And Big Dog Ball Talk Monkey, you are the fucking worst.
Yeah, he doesn't do anything.
All you do is come here and fucking make noise sometimes, fucking idiot. Yep. But yes, now we are moving on to some trade talks here. A little bit of some spice, a little bit of some beef here. We haven't had a lot of beef in the NBA this season. That's what we always like to hear, guys getting at it. Shams went on Twitter, ESPN insider for the NBA, saying that Jimmy Butler reportedly on the trade block for the Miami Heat, with Golden State, Houston, and Dallas as potential landing spots for Butler, a preferred landing spot. And then it comes out a big tirade on X, I guess I should say, from Jimmy Butler's agent, saying that Shams was lying and that there's no validity to any of this, and that he's always saying shit that has no actual sources. But then Shams comes back on some sort of a show and says, actually, doubling down, this is legit. He's lying. He's the liar. And also, Phoenix is the team that people need to really be watching right now as we kind of get into these Jimmy Butler sweepstakes. But before we get into kind of the mock trades and the potential of what a Jimmy Butler trade would look like, I'm a little puzzled as to why the Heat all of a sudden now want to potentially trade Jimmy Butler. Because we've seen them struggle, and we've seen them kind of be these middle of the pack finishes, or again, the last couple of years, with a play-in team, for God's sakes. Like, they haven't been a great squad, and now that they're the fifth seed in the Eastern Conference, they have the longest win, or tied for the longest win streak in the NBA right now, with four games in a row. They're 7-3 in their last 10. Why would you want to trade your best player now? I just don't understand. Like, it just seems like very weird timing. He's still got 2 years, I believe, left on his deal, so it's not like he's going anywhere, or you can't trade him next year when he's expiring. I actually think that'd probably be a little bit more attractive for a lot of people.
Because I think it's a player option, as far as I know, some 50 mil player option next year.
Yeah, that would make sense.
If I'm remembering right, but yeah.
But yeah, it's just odd to me that, like, all the times, like we've said before, like, trading Jimmy Butler is a good idea, and to speed up this rebuild, build around Bam, try and figure out something different, especially with all of his injuries and the way they've been finishing. But now, of all times, when you're actually seeing some success, you're getting some wins, the Eastern Conference is wide open. Boston obviously is the big favorite, but I mean, like, this Miami Heat team, we've seen them, they beat the Cavs earlier in the week. We've seen them, push some of these top teams to the brink. They've had a lot of success historically against the Celtics. So I still think this Heat team right now, like, of all the years, this might be the highest I've been on them in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I do see what you're saying. I think they can, like, they do have guys that can be more effective for them than the last few years. If you look at, like, Jaime Jaquez and Jovic is coming along, like, they're deeper than I think they have been. And if Jimmy can be out there on the court healthy with guys like Tyler Hero, who seemingly is still getting better, Bam, who maybe I'd say is having a bit of a down year, but we still know what he brings to the table. Like, yeah, I can see them being, solidly in that 4 or 5 spot and giving someone a run for their money. But I still don't believe in them as currently constructed, being able to do anything, really that significant when it comes down to it. Like, maybe they could win one playoff series, but that would be the most that I could see happening. And even that would kind of shock me at this point. But the thing is, I think they have enough there that they can still, like, I would say either trade Jimmy or bring in someone else. Like, I've always said, like, there's got to be some more impactful four that you could put in between Jimmy and Bam there and sort of make your offense a little bit more powerful. Like, you know, John Collins was a guy I thought when he was still with Atlanta, maybe you could go get him. You know, he doesn't fix all your problems, not the best defensively, but I think he could bring another element to that offense. You got to look at like the starting point guard spot. I think like Terry Rozier, is he really your guy? Are you going to give the keys more over to Tyler Hero and sort of fill out the roster from there? Like there's questions there, but I think if you want to be serious about being a contender, I think they do have to make moves. But if they don't think they can make that, if they don't see a path to that, and they're like, okay, maybe trading Jimmy is our best move, then I understand that. But I agree with you. It seems like the weirdest time to be considering that now. Like, you could have done that in the offseason. You could have done that, I don't know. You could have considered that earlier on. It seems like it makes more sense for them rather than just to throw in the towel. Because once you trade Jimmy, you're kind of throwing in the towel. Like, there's no, I don't think anyone thinks,
unless you're going to go out and get a guy who can kind of replace him, you know what I mean? But again, then it's like, what's the point?
That? Yeah. And no one's going to be trading you their best guy for Jimmy Butler, who wants an extension and is well past 30 and has had struggles.
I think
staying
he's
on the
about
court.
36 now. He's old.
Yeah.
Like, he's officially old.
Yeah. Even by NBA standards, very old. Like, he's, so exactly. It doesn't really make sense to me. And then it's like, from what Shams was saying, is it a coming from Jimmy type of thing where he's the one saying, look, I don't see it happening with this team anymore. I want to go somewhere else. Like, maybe. It doesn't seem like he's got that much leverage. And you look at all these trade rules now with the first apron, second apron, all this stuff. It is so hard to figure out trades that actually make sense and ones that could realistically happen. Like, when you look at the names that were initially mentioned, like Golden State, we talked about Jimmy to Golden State. That's tough. Like, I guess you're putting Kuminga in that, but how are you making the salary work? You're going to have to throw a lot of guys
Wiggins.
Like, it's plausible. But again, then you're betting on a big three of Jimmy, Draymond, and Steph. Like, you
Golden
need some
State
youth
retirement.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And you look at, you know, the Rockets, that maybe makes a little bit more sense, but who exactly are you giving up in that one? If you're Houston, I think it's
right. I've got some mock trades for these other three
you've
teams.
Got it? Okay, good.
We've done some mock trades for the Warriors. We did that already. And I believe it was something along the lines of, it was Wiggins, Kuminga, and I want to say it was like
Looney or
maybe
something.
Melton. It was something like that, which again is a decent package. But again, I actually think that's one of the rare situations in these mock trades that I've got here that Golden State actually would kind of win a little bit in a way. Other way around. I actually think the Heat would win a little bit.
Well, I agree.
All
if
these
you
other
get
ones.
A young, if you can get a good young talented guy for Jimmy Butler at this point, it's like, let's do that. Because how else does this situation play out? You either give in and you pay him, or he walks for nothing, or you bring it down to the wire where you know other teams aren't going to give you their best thing because they know they can just possibly just sign him the next year in free agency. So. Yeah, I think 100% the Heat would win in that scenario if you're getting Kuminga.
And it's not like this is also, and Wiggins, of course. Jimmy Butler is just a guy who's going to go to a new team and be like, oh, cool. Yeah, let me merge into your system. Yeah, let me learn it. Let me just be a kind of a B player here. He's going to come in there and demand the ball, demand attention. He's going to want to be the superstar. So that's also like, I think that a lot of teams should be weary of trying to trade for him because it could totally change the culture and shift things in that locker room. So if you're having success right now bringing in Jimmy Butler, I genuinely don't know if that's the smart bet to make.
Hey, I just had a thought. A team that needs some veteran leadership. What about back to Minnesota? Getting him back there.
Yeah, that went well. The
ship
first
out
time.
Julius Randle. him and
new management over there, isn't it?
Well, I think that's still up in the air, right? The ownership, they're still fighting. A-Rod and whoever else, I don't know what's going on. But, maybe put them on the list. That could be interesting.
But
Phoenix sounds insane.
I'll start it off with Phoenix. This is a weird one. This is actually this was the hardest one to do. And it takes a lot of different moving pieces here because we've got guys who would be included in this trade that are still on the recently signed list. So I think that it's whatever, like, January 15th or something. You have to wait till you can trade them. It might be. Oh no, December 15th. So actually, they can already be
tomorrow.
Traded now. We're good. So these guys, this trade could start happening. So the trade I've got here, so over to Phoenix, and again, this is probably the biggest one in terms of the amount of personnel being moved because of the way you have to make the money work. Because again, Jimmy Butler's contract is huge, and the teams that he's selected don't have a lot of big contracts to match.
Yes, exactly.
So it's Jimmy Butler, Duncan Robinson, and Alec Burks going to Phoenix in exchange for Bradley Beal, Royce O'Neal, and Josh Okogie.
You know Bradley Beal would have to waive his no-trade clause.
Yes, exactly. That's would part of it, right?
Who knows?
I think he might. I know that the Heat aren't exactly, like, you know, I think he has a way better chance of, I don't know. I was going to say they have a better chance of winning the title in Phoenix than he does in Miami, but I think that it would be harder to get to the finals in the West than it would be in the East.
That's true.
And then he would go in there, and he's going to get all the shots he wants. It'll be back to, like, Washington Bradley Beal. He's still going to be getting paid a shit ton. He's not going to have to play defense because he's going to have Bam. He's going to have Terry Rozier trying to kind of be an irritant out there. Tyler Hero and Bradley Beal would be kind of a weak wing set there. But, I mean, it is what it is. Yeah. But I don't know. Potentially, and also, you know, everybody seems like they want to live in South Beach, so I don't think that that's something he would stick his nose up at. But yeah, Bradley Beal, he would still have to waive that, and that's
who are the who are the other two coming from Phoenix to Miami?
From Phoenix to Miami was Royce O'Neal and Josh Okogie.
And Josh, okay. And then it was Jimmy, Duncan Robinson, and who was the last guy?
Alec Burks.
Burks, okay.
And Burks is on a one-year, $2 million deal. So okay, he's just to make the salary cap, Cool. And,
I'm this doing one, that like, if I'm Phoenix for the
record. Oh, yeah, Phoenix, that would be amazing.
I'm doing that, and yeah, right away. But, yeah.
I'm sure they'd have to probably throw in a pick if I don't even think they have any.
Yeah, yeah, true. But, yeah, just man for man, I don't hate it for either side. I mean, still, I feel like you'd have to give both sides like reason to kind of accept that deal. It feels a bit like they can sort of talk themselves, both of them, into it being more of like a lateral move than anything else. But I think Jimmy Butler works better sort of in between Devin Booker and Kevin Durant than Bradley Beal ever would.
Yes, yeah, 100%. A little bit more of a natural fit there.
Yeah.
And then with Tyus Jones, you know, that would be pretty nice. Then you get Duncan Robinson off the bench. Like, I think that this would be a tough sell for like the Heat to accept, but you know, we'll see. Maybe they would want to do that. But the other problem is that all these guys are on multi-year deals. Like, Bradley Beal's got 3 years left on his. Royce O'Neal has four, and Okogie has two. So a lot of cap to eat up there too. But you know, who knows? Maybe they'd like to do it. The other team, the Dallas Mavericks. This one's a weird one. Again, another one that it's like, I don't know if the Mavericks would want to do this because they don't have a lot of guys outside of Luka and Kyrie making a lot of money. So it's a it's kind of tough to like make this work. So this is a 4 players for 1 deal.
Damn.
In this change.
So, gotta check if this works with the apron rules, but I don't know if which other of these guys is approaching the apron, wearing the apron. But give it to me.
So going to the Dallas Mavericks is Jimmy Butler, just Jimmy. And again, maybe there's a pick thrown in here. I didn't throw any picks in on this. That's kind of hard to do. But going to the Miami Heat would be Klay Thompson, Daniel Gafford, Maxi Kleba, and Quentin Grimes. So you're getting like 4 guys who you can roll out there and play. And they can, you know, some of these guys can be starters. I actually do think that the Heat would like be decent. Like, I don't think that they would be playoff contenders by any means. But I mean, you get Klay in there, he can add some shooting. Gafford would be an elite 6-man. I think Maxi Kleba would play really well at the 4 spot next to Bam, kind of stretching the floor out with him. And then Quentin Grimes would be, like, that is the guy you need in the backcourt with the next Tyler Hero. Like, he would be perfect for them to get. He's on the last year of his deal, though. So, I mean, it would be kind of tough in the offseason to make it work. But they'd also be shedding $4 million off of the cap, in this case, the Heat. So the Mavericks would be eating on more contracts just with one guy shedding off 4. So, they would really be sacrificing some depth for some star power. But a Luka, Kyrie, Jimmy trio, that would be a pretty tough team to beat. You still have Derek Lively, holding down the 5 spot there. PJ Washington at the 4. That's a pretty nasty starting 5.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, When I saw that Dallas was kind of on the long list for Jimmy, I'm like, yeah, that technically that would work okay. I I wonder if there's a bit of sort of overlap there. Like, obviously, Jimmy's better than PJ Washington and someone like, you know, Najee Marshall, who they signed, who's been really good for them actually this year. But, you know, that's a lot of sort of wing guys. And you, I realize you almost can't have too many of those guys in today's NBA, but, and not to mention Jimmy's injured a lot. So, you know, it probably could work, but I'm almost like, when I look at it, I'm like, does it make more sense to say, and again, this, notwithstanding everything we just said recently about Dallas and how Kyrie and Luka have made it work, does it make more sense to send Kyrie to Miami, like in this in this you know, scenario, and say, look, we
that would be huge. That'd be crazy.
It did work really well, but you know, I think maybe when we got guys like Quentin Grimes now and some of these other you know, guys in the backcourt who we like, do we want to give them up? Do we give up sort of the weak defensive link in Kyrie, and we bring in Jimmy and try and totally retrofit how this team is structured? This is never going to happen, but you know, that is a thought that occurred to me. Mm-hmm. Much more likely though, and not to mention you're also giving up in your scenario, you're giving up Clay, who you know, maybe in a scenario where you bring Jimmy in, you kind of want to be able to play him between you know, Luka and Butler. Who knows? I mean, we know Clay's not having the best season in the world, and you know, that is what it is. And in a trade like this, if this were ever to happen, he probably would be the one that kind of gets sacrificed with kind of his mid-level kind of salary that slots in there nicely. But yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to think about. I don't hate it. It is a lot to give up. You're sacrificing some of your depth, but Dallas is, I think, deep enough even outside of a trade like that to be able to withstand it. And you know, as much as I believe in PJ Washington, it's so hard to win a championship in today's day and age when you don't have a top tier superstar approaching level wing player. That is still what Jimmy Butler can be. You know, you can argue whether he's that really, you know, most of the time anymore. I would say probably not, but you know,
probably not scoring, but I mean, still playmaking, defense.
Yes, yes. And as soon as 2 years ago, you know, led a team all the way to the finals. So, mm-hmm. you know, he could still get there. So, yeah, in general terms, I like him as a fit on the Mavs. Yeah, you just got to get into the nitty gritty of who's going where, who's doing what. But, you know, even that one, I don't hate it for the Heat. Like, that's enough value for me.
I think I like that one. For the Heat haul, I think that's probably the best one out of all these the three mock trades I got thrown out here. Maybe again next to the Golden State package. But again, I just don't like the Golden State fit with Jimmy. But I think the Heat one actually is probably the trade I think is the most equal, which is crazy to say. A 4-for-1 is an equal trade in this day and age. But the last one I've got here, so the Heat and the Rockets, it's a 3-for-1 deal. And this one is interesting, and I actually think that the Heat would be a little bit into it, and it kind of works. Again, maybe there would have to be a pick thrown in there. The Rockets do have some draft capital, so you know, they could probably make it work. But Jimmy Butler going to the Rockets in exchange for Dylan Brooks, Steven Adams, and Reed Shepard. So you're getting, you know, their top pick of the draft, third overall in this past year's draft. You get Steven Adams, who is, I think, a really solid big still. He's off the books at the end of this year as well. So if they want to move on from the veteran Kiwi, then they could. And then you get Dylan Brooks, who I don't know if there's many guys in the NBA who would be a better Heat culture fit than Dylan Brooks. I think they would absolutely love to get a guy like that on that team. And the only thing, again, like in this one, is just like, I think the Heat would like it, but like you're still not really getting a lot. Like you're pretty much doing this trade to bank on the fact that Reed Shepard's going to turn into essentially what's the best case scenario? He's a shorter version of Tyler Hero. Like that's it just doesn't
more of
really
a point
make,
guard, I guess. But
yeah, it just doesn't really, like, in my mind, make a lot of sense to make that move. And then you think about it on the other side of it, like for the Rockets, like, again, this is a young team. They seem to kind of be figuring things out. They've got their big dogs established in that locker room. You bring in Jimmy, and it's going to change things. Like, you know, I like him and Fred VanVleet, I think, would kind of be jockeying a little bit to see who's the locker room leader. He's going to be taking a lot of shots. He's going to be taking a lot of moments away from Jalen Green and Alperen Sengun. But if they could somehow make it work, I mean, that starting five, VanVleet, Green, Butler, You know, whether you want to throw Thompson, Whitmore, Jabari Smith at the four there, I guess most likely, and then Sengun. Like that's a hell of a starting five.
Yeah, this is actually, believe it or not, this is the one I like the most, and I think is the most realistic, because the Rockets, this is Jimmy is actually exactly what the Rockets need, which is a guy who fits can go defense and finish games. Well, yeah, he fits the defensive culture exactly, but you know, he's someone you can go give the ball to at the end of a close game who's not you know, right now it's like, who would you go to in a really tightly contested playoff game? Do you go to Sengun? He's still unproven. I could see him getting sort of, you know, bobbling it and getting a bit overwhelmed in that position against, you know, opposing playoff defenses. Do you go to Fred VanVleet? He's got the experience, but as we say, having a really bad year shooting the ball overall and is a miniature guard. We've seen him struggle, like, you know, in the post Raptors championship years. You know, he's had some rough playoff outings. Like, I don't like their top level offensive production when you're just looking at like one-on-one, who do we have to go up against the best guy on the other side? That's kind of the last thing that they're missing. Jimmy would slot in there nicely. And I could see Jimmy and Fred VanVleet sort of butting heads in the locker room, maybe initially, but I actually think those guys kind of would get on the same page pretty quickly and work together. Cause Fred, I don't think Fred has like the pride of like, oh, I absolutely need to be the undoubted leader of this team. Like he can play kind of second fiddle, I think, pretty easily, especially when it's a guy like Jimmy Butler, who's, you know, career wise, so much accomplished, so much more than Fred. So
not championship.
No, you're right. But you know, I actually could see this working out really well. This is the one that kind of raised my eyebrows the most. I think I agree that if you're the Heat, it's like really Reed Shepard's all we get. But if you're the Rockets, like, could you be talked into throwing Cam Whitmore in there? Could you work this deal more around a Jalen Green type of package where you say, look, we've given it a shot. We don't think he's going to be, you know, turn into the guy that we need him to. And is that enough of a enticing young player for the Heat? Maybe it is. I don't know. But I do think of all of the ones, this to me is the most realistic that could happen during the season this year. And I do think it actually, Jimmy fills a need really nicely for this team. And I do think whether it's Jimmy or the next kind of superstar, that's the next step for the Rockets. I think they've got a lot of good, you know, players who are solid in their roles, but unless I see something different, I don't think Jalen Green is going to become like a top tier A1 type superstar guy anytime soon. And so I think in order to get that, they're going to have to bring one in. They're going to have to trade some of these younger guys. Cause let's be honest, they have a lot of young guys. Like they don't need all of these, young athletic players. Like eventually I think one or two of them will be better served as, you know, in a trade package for a more established star. And you slot one of those in like a Jimmy Butler. You know, I don't think he's the perfect fit with how old he is. And, you know, the fact that he's going to want to get paid, here coming up, but, I don't hate it. I'm okay with this one. And I think it would make the Rockets better, at the end of the day.
Yeah. And again, they could throw in, their own first round pick this year, to sweeten that pot. Yep. They've also got, the first round pick of either OKC or Phoenix, depending on how the draft lottery and everything shakes out. So they've got two first round picks they can give up this year.
A nice package. Like they can entice Miami.
Yeah, no 2026 picks, but they do have two 2027 first round picks, and one of them is with the Brooklyn Nets. Actually, pardon me, they've got three 2027 first round picks. One of their own, one Brooklyn swap, and one through Phoenix. So they've got some future future assets they could move. So maybe you might have talked me into my own trade here, Jordan. Houston might be the way to go. We'll see what they end up doing here. And we'll see if Jimmy Butler does end up going on the move. We'll be sure to get a podcast out there for you guys if that does happen. Now, set to wrap this up, we're going to do a little bit of a game here. We like to play blind NBA comparisons. Jordan has got a couple of comparisons here. He's going to have two players. He's going to read off some of their stats to me. I'm not going to know who the players are. Jordan knows who they are. And I'm going to have to pick, based on the raw stats, which player I would rather have on my team. So, Jordan, without further ado, take it away, man. What's the first comparison we've got?
Yeah, and play along at home, everyone.
Play along. Who'd you take?
Family-friendly game. Okay, so number one, Matt. I've got three for you here, by the way, for the record.
Perfect.
So player number one of this first comparison, 18.4 points per game. Okay, 18.4.
Yep.
3 rebounds, 6.6 assists, 45% from the field, and 1.1 steals.
Okay.
Player two, 17.9 points per game.
Okay.
4 rebounds, 6 assists, 42.5% from the field, and 1.5 steals.
So a little bit better, a little bit better defensively, a little bit better rebounding from player B. Correct. And a little bit better playmaking and efficiency from player A.
Correct. And points basically come out in a wash, 18.4 for player A, 17.9 for player B.
I think I'm going to go with player A. I like the offensive upside. I do believe in defense, obviously, but if you're averaging, you know, around 18 points, you can be a lead kind of facilitator. You know, it seems like they're both a guard of some sort, at least a primary ball handler in a lot of regards. If they're getting up there around, you know, 6 assists. So when it comes down to it, I like the a little bit better efficiency. Like 45% from the field isn't amazing. But I mean, you're close to 50, so that's not bad. Like the difference between 45 and 42 is actually a pretty decent chunk there.
Yes.
So I'll take the player A in this one. I think that that would be my pick.
Okay. You just picked Dennis Schroeder over Jamal Murray, man. How could you do that to your own hometown hero?
Schroeder's been having a hell of a year, man. Stats-wise, he's been having a hell of a year.
He has. I mean, we know what it's really like to have Schroeder.
I would not take him over Jamal Murray if I knew that.
No. But it's
That's why we do this exercise. Demonstrates
how bad of a season Jamal has been having, I think, more than anything. 42.5 from the field, just 18 points per game. It's rough. And I actually had to take out the 3-point percentage because it would be too obvious of a player. It was way too obvious in Schroeder's favor. So I had to just not include that. But I think it's like Schroeder's like 38. Jamal Murray's like 34 or something. Oof. Awful. So
Schroeder's, he's not afraid to get active, not afraid to get live. He was getting in, getting into it with Ja Morant on Friday night in their game late. Yes, so I don't see that much of that happening from Jamal Murray, but, yeah, I mean, that's pretty sad. I mean, yeah, it's I do think Jamal Murray probably is a better equipped player if I'm trying to, you know, make a run in the playoffs. But yeah, Dennis Schroeder's having maybe the best year of his career this year.
Yeah, a little bit of German national team Schroeder showing up in the NBA here finally. A little bit empty here
with that
program. Yes, definitely. Yes, you got to take in. Yes, got to take that into account. But interesting nonetheless.
Yep,
okay. Yep. Second one here. Player one, 16.2 points per game. I won't give you the point twos, actually. 16 points. It's going to be too confusing. 16 points per game, 10 rebounds,
okay.
5 assists,
ooh.
44% from the field, 0.8 blocks per game, 1.5 steals per game.
Okay.
Player two, also 16 points per game, but technically player one is 16.2. Player two is 15.9. So rounding, you're getting 16.
Sure.
11 rebounds, 2.7 assists, 59% from the field, 1.3 blocks, and 1.1 steals.
Oh, yeah. Player B for sure. It seems like if you're going like the points are equal, the rebounds are better, the defense is way better, and the efficiency is higher. I'm assuming player
assists.
A seems like. Assists
player
player A
has
A.
the assists 5.2 to 2.7, so that's pretty sizable. But
but based on what I'm assuming, this is like a 4 or 5 in some situation. I think player A might be Jalen Johnson, but at the same time, I think that maybe he averages more points than that. But you know, maybe he doesn't. That's who it seems like. But yeah, if I'm looking at a player, I just need the boards. Like the defense really stands out to me. The efficiency really stands out to me. Kind of swapping what my preferred focus is from the last comparison there. I want my guards to be a little more offense, but my front court had like a little bit more defense. So I think I'm gonna go player B there. I like the little bit better rebounding, better defense, better efficiency.
You just picked Jakob Poeltl over Bam Adebayo. That's what you just
did.
And yeah,
these are two good ones, man.
The season from this is the whoop-de-doo. I'm trying to call you out here, to trick you with I'm like, who's having a bad season? I looked at Bam's fucking raw stats. Why is Bam shooting 44% from the field?
Yeah,
that's unbelievable.
I don't know, man. He started to shoot the three a lot more. Like he shoots like two threes a game. He's not hitting them at a high clip, but he's shooting them a lot more consistently now. Like he's actually attempting them. I'm not saying he's not shooting them well, but yeah, it is crazy that he's shooting that low from the floor. That's pretty rough.
Yeah, for a center, that is pretty rough. But but also shout out Yak. I was like,
no, he's having an awesome
got to be good. Basically, similar to Bam in all these categories.
Last month.
Yeah, there you go. Except for assists, obviously Bam still laps him there. But I also would think Bam would be averaging at least a block per game, but 0.8. It's he's when it comes to the raw stats, having a bit of a down year. But all right, last one here, Matt. Player one. I don't know if this one's going to end up being hard. I'm curious to see what you think about this one. But player one, 26 points per game, 5.5 rebounds per game, 4 assists, 45% from the field, 42% from three, and two stocks per game. So merge the blocks and the steals. Player number two, 21.8 points per game, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, 50.5 from the field, 38.5 from three, and 2.8 stocks. So getting up there close to three. So do you need any of those repeated?
So the what was the difference between the rebounds and assists for both of these ones?
So player A, 5.5 rebounds, 4 assists. Player B, 6 rebounds, 5 assists. So player B's got the edge in rebounds, assists, and field goal percentage and stocks. Player A has 26 points to basically 22 points and better from three, 42% to 38%.
Ooh, that's tough. The defense is huge. That's a big gap between the two. Oh man. Like at first when we were reading off those stats for player, I'm like, oh, this is gonna be a no-brainer. Like the 45 from the field is decent again. Seems like it's a guard of some sorts. 42% from three is awesome. Like that's elite shooting. But I mean, yeah, you kind of, it's like, do you want the score first guy or like having the superior rebounder, like the, cause what was you said again, like five assists to two or something, 5 to 3?
No. So four for player A. So not bad. 3.9 assists technically and 5 assists for player B. So it's just one assist.
It's not that big of a difference. And it was a 4.0. Ooh. So maybe, this is tough. This one honestly could be a coin flip. I think, do I want to fall in love with a three ball on this? Like
and player B is not bad from three, 38.5. Like that's pretty good, but player A is better.
Yeah. And the defense is still so like 2.1 stocks isn't horrible or whatever. I think it's what you said,
two stocks to 2.8 for the second player B.
I'm going to go with the offensive guy. I want the points. I want the buckets. I want the shooting. I'm going to go with player A over player B.
Okay, nice.
But it was close.
This was a good one because, you kind of go back and forth. Anthony Edwards is player A. Player B is Jalen Williams from OKC.
So that's crazy that it was even that close. I definitely, I think this is the first one that if you just ask me who I take, is the first one I've actually picked correctly in, if you want to use that word. But that's a good one. But he's having a hell of a year.
He is. 50% from the field overall kind of shocked me that he's shooting over that with as a wing player who takes a lot of them. 38, that's pretty impressive. But 42% from Ant for the amount that he's shooting is pretty damn impressive from three. But two of the best wing players in the league, I'd say, at this point.
Oh, yeah, easily. Yeah, for sure. Well, let us know who you guys picked at Big Dog Ball Talk for these blind comparisons. And maybe throw a couple blind comparisons at us if you got the time. We'd love to break those down. So get at us at Big Dog Ball Talk. X, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook for all you old heads out there. Give us a follow. Help us grow. Help us give you guys better and more content. And maybe put some money in our pockets. I don't know. We put a lot of time and effort in this. Help us out. We're
given Alex
guys.
Money in years.
That guy's
on the
fucking
payroll.
Drowning.
Give him
it. But give us a follow, help us out, and we will be back on Monday previewing the NBA Cup Finals as well as everything else that goes down this weekend. Maybe we'll talk about Joel Embiid being a massive bitch again and being out from a sinus fracture because he got slapped in the side of the head.
Is the sinus a bone? I didn't know that. I thought that was just something in your face. He's making up new ones.
Yeah, he's making up new ones. I genuinely don't even know what to say. Like, I don't want to talk. Actually, holy damn it! Wait, I broke the shun. Yeah, I forgot. It. That bitch Shankly. From the Philadelphia 76ers. Yeah, nice job, man. And other sports guys break their orbital bones, still go out in there and play. So suck it up. Put on a mask if it's that bad.
Yeah, they lost.
Your team is.
You also lose to the Pacers last night, which is not a team you want to lose to these days, but.
No. Again, they're going to be one of the worst teams in the Eastern Conference this year, which is insane. Yeah. But shout out to number 21 there on Philly. So, this has been Bit of the Ball Talk. Matt Eichhorn, Jordan Flegel, and as my good friend Jordan always says.
Christmas really is here, Matt. I ate an ice cream sandwich before I got online with you today at around, that was around noon. It's that time of year. I don't care. I'll eat chocolate any time of the day. I'll wake up, start eating it. So that's where I'm at. I hope all of our listeners are there too. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Well, he said.